to True Health Live, your favorite public health podcast. We are live on YouTube, Facebook, and audio on your favorite podcast platforms. If you're interested in public health, then this is the space for you. Greetings, everyone. Welcome. Welcome back.
Hi, everyone.
How have you been? How's this, the last two strongs, last 2 weeks, how have they treated you?
They've been good. Can't complain. You know, we're here.
Yeah.
The best of everything. But overall, it's been a good 2 weeks. That's good.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. It's like we have to make the best of it. Like if we look at it, it's like mindset, what we talked about last time. Like if we have like that poor mindset, then it's gonna be, you know, crappy, you know, whatever. So, yeah.
Right.
Awesome. So, welcome everyone. We are live. As always, like we should be live on YouTube and Facebook and probably Instagram. We're trying something new. So, if you see us on Instagram, you know, give us a shout out and say what's up. If not, I'll figure something out and I'll try to fix it. But in the meantime, we're going to do a recap. So, you know, we opened up this fourth season and I must say, like, I was like, season four, goodness. Like, okay. I was like, that's way to go. Wait, what's it called? Like, consistency.
Staying the course.
Staying the course, season four. So we opened up with Black mental health. So we're going to have a Black mental health series. And so that is, and that series is going to be all throughout the season. So then they may not be back to back, but definitely we're going to always come back to the Black mental health series, as well as the champions, the series where we interview public health or healthcare professionals to, like, you know, go over the different things that you can do in your public health career. For those of you who are like public health students or interested in public health. That being said, we opened up this season with Black mental health and specifically focused on women and with our guests. Like, she was so wonderful, so sweet, talking about vulnerability. So that, you know, debunking the strong Black woman stereotype, like she talked about the myth of it, and I explained like a lot of what I got out of it was like vulnerability. So we had a really, you know, nice discussion about vulnerability and why, you know, how we've lost that and why it's important to have it, so that because there's an intersection where that, you know, allows us to remain or be feminine. And that being said, there was a lot that came out of that conversation. And I think two in particular, the pins, now I get it. Two things that we said we'll put a pin in. But before we go forward, I'm going to say peace, House of Uya, peace, Chief Uya. Thank you for joining us. So the two pins that we put things in, and some of it was based on some of the commentary and questions that we got regarding women vulnerable, Black women specifically, women and being vulnerable and being feminine and not wanting to always like take control, right? Like not being vulnerable, but always wanting to take control. And obviously, we're not talking about every single Black woman, but we are, there is a generalization. And so that's how I'm speaking, but with the caveat that we know that it's not every single one. So, yeah, that. So the first pin, if I remember correctly, we mentioned diminishing, and you let me know, Nanishka, because I don't want to like kind of take your word. But we kind of talked about like when we're with someone, we have a mate, whether it's marriage, you know, any relationship with a man, like that idea of diminishing ourselves. And so I had asked the question, like, you know, what does that mean? And I'll give it like some context. Like, you know, so today we're talking about singlehood and sanity. And a lot of that came from the comment that we got about, like, you know, perpetual singlehood. So it, and we're talking about mental health. So it's like, how does that, you know, those behaviors that lead to perpetual singlehood, or, you know, what do they call it? Serial dating, whatever, mm-hmm. you know, how does it lead to, or how does it negatively affect our mental state or our sanity, right? Because sanity refers to mental health. So that first pin being that idea that we have to think about not diminishing. And that, and the question that I had was, well, who said it was diminishing, or whatever that it is, and what is the gauge that we're using for diminishing, or who and what has defined what diminishing looks like? So that's the first thing. So we'll go there. So I'll stop talking.
So diminishing is such a strong word. I wouldn't say diminishing. I think, like, I'll speak from my own experience. I wouldn't say that I felt like I was diminishing myself. And if I did use that term, I apologize. That's not the term I should have used. But I think sometimes while we're trying to soften ourselves and, you know, being our soft girl after being the strong woman, the strong Black woman for such a long period of time, and quite often it's not through choice, it's through circumstances. It's because we have to be. We don't have any other, you know, any other direction to go in. We're so used to it that it's hard to transition into the soft girl, you know, in the soft woman era. And then when we have a partner, it can be challenging just for the simple fact that we're not used to this, right? So that person has to prove themselves that they are capable of taking, you know, taking things off of our plate. And so for me, I was ready. Like I said last time, I was ready to, the S is off my chest. I'm good. Here, take it. If you want it, you got it. No fight over here, right? I just wanted to embrace my womanhood and just, you know, and be Anushka without having to carry the weight of everything, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I began to realize was that sometimes my partner at the time was a little intimidated by me. Just because of the way I carried myself, what I had going, and the way I, you know, how I came into our relationship. He loved it, you know, in the beginning, I'm excited. Yeah, you know, this is a new person. I'm getting to know them, so on and so forth. But I think it was, I came to a point where he started getting a little intimidated, not because of anything I intentionally did, but just because I think it was more so on him and how he felt about himself and where he was at in life. And so I found myself sometimes lessening myself or falling back to a space where I wasn't showing up as my full self because I wanted him to feel bigger and stronger and take on the lead. And I then realized, like, no, that's not the way, right? Because that's not doing us any justice. If I'm sitting here uncomfortable just so you could be comfortable, that's not the way. Because how, me as a partner, how am I helping you to kind of navigate those waters? How am I, you know, picking up where you lack to help you figure out what's going on? And how do I truly let you lead when in my head, I don't believe you can, you know what I'm saying? So yeah. It wasn't diminishing, but it was concerning. And I felt like, no, in a healthy relationship, we have to show up as ourselves, our fully ourselves, and embrace authentically who we are. And we're supposed to balance each other. Right. And compliment mm-hmm. one another. We're not completing each other, because we're complete human beings on our own. And if you ever have to come into a relationship, any ship, friendship, relationship, whatever that ship is.
I thought you said something else.
No, ship. I have this whole analogy with ships. If you have to come to anything where you're not completed and you're coming in half, then I don't think that's a healthy situation. So I'm coming fully as myself and complimenting my partner, vice versa as well. And so I had to really sit with that, think about it, how it was affecting me, whether that be in silence or me actually verbalizing it, and also how that affected him and our overall relationship, and found ways to, you know, talk to each other in a healthy dialogue where there was understanding, and even the uncomfortable pieces of it, we were able to, like, talk through, see how we can, you know, navigate those waters. And there were times where we have to agree to disagree, but never again. will I ever lessen me so I can, so that the other person can feel more of, right? It shouldn't be that way, because I think that's unhealthy, and that is not a great, that's not a great dynamic in a relationship.
I think that, yes, like you have to come as your complete, I get what you mean, like come as your complete self. Like it shouldn't be like you're waiting for somebody to give you something. Like there should already be like personality there and something there. And sometimes that will shift based on, you know, who your partner is, and mm-hmm. And it, sometimes it should shift, right? And I think, yeah, if you sitting in a place where there is that idea, that feeling that you are lessening, then that's when resentment steps in, and mm-hmm. that's never cool, right? But I would want to like introduce, like, what about like coming in and knowing, like, well, I guess it's different, because if this person is like, and this is without like, you know, kind of putting all the business on Front Street, but it's like, what gauge are we using to say that they're intimidated? Like, it's the same thing. Like what are the signs that they're intimidated that would then cause us to either like become worse? I'm not saying you, but like, you know, become worse, become hard, or, you know, feel like we have to kind of tone it down a little bit. And not saying that toning down is not a problem. Like if a man comes into your life that where you're like, oh, I can be, but like you said, take the S off my chest and tone it down, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would say, I didn't say the intimidating part. He actually told me, he said it, like, I sometimes I get a little intimidated. And I understood where he was coming from, because our backgrounds are so different. Our life experiences are very, very different. And again, he was a great person. He is a great person. We just realized we are on two different playing fields, right? And what I was ready for, he may not have fully been ready for, but he was trying, right? So again, you give one another grace. It's nothing. And like you said, it's nothing wrong with falling back a little. And changing things up. I think it all depends on the relationship and the people, because there is a big difference between changing for the better and just changing because you're changing out of fear of losing that person, or, you know what I mean? You have to have confidence in yourself and confidence in your relationship and confidence in each other that wherever you have differences, you can work through them, right? You have to listen to understand, not always listen to respond. You have to also be engaging and thoughtful and mindful, because at the end of the day, we are still people and we have feelings. And so if I'm coming to you authentically, and I'm coming to you not only as, you know, your partner, but also a friend, because I believe in friendship at the base of every relationship, you want to be able to receive what I'm saying, and I want to be able to receive what you're saying. So really having compassion at the table to just listen to what the other person is saying, and taking it in and like talking through it and working through it through understanding.
Okay. We have two questions in the chat. I'm like, last time it got away from me a little bit. So Chiefy, I asked, what sort of scenario or life circumstances would force a female to have to be hard? I think we can both answer that question. I would think if she is, and I'll make I statements, or I'll answer from my own personal experience what would cause me to be hard, I'm not alone in this, is that being single and moving around in the world where there isn't that counterpart to balance out what I'm supposed to be. Because then I'm doing everything by myself. Then we get into that strong Black woman thing. And it's funny, because I was asked that question many years ago by my father. Like, it just kind of came out of nowhere. He's like, what's a strong Black woman? I was like, I don't know. Like, I could not even answer the question, because, and as he asked it, in that moment, I was like, that's dumb. Like, I'm like, it doesn't even make sense. Like, oh, like, so, like, I think even from then on, it was like, don't even go around calling yourself that. But even though I wasn't calling myself that, I was still portraying that, like, I could do this, I got it, I could do it all by myself. And I think that those circumstances, like being out in the world alone, uncovered, would force one to be hard. And then you are taking on something that you're not, you know, or that you shouldn't be or shouldn't have to be. Mm-hmm. So that in turn can mess with your mental health, you know?
Mm-hmm. It definitely can. And then also too, it also, I think you can be hard in, it comes from your upbringing as well. Like if all you saw were strong single women around you, and mostly women that were taking on the bulk of things and doing all the things across the board, it's like that was defining to you. So like for me, I had men in my life. Like my dad was still in my life, regardless of his activity, you know, he was present. I had uncles and, you know, cousins. I had male figures in my life. But predominantly, it was always the women who made things. Mm-hmm. In my household, it was always my mom. And whether if that meant, you know, her working three jobs, making sure we were in school, making sure everything got done, making sure that she went and picked us up and took us to school, picked us up, whatever the case may be. And as I got older, I started helping her. So lessening the burden. It wasn't a male figure that lessened the burden for her. It was actually me. And I am the eldest for both of my parents. And so from a young age, I took on a lot of responsibility for myself, for my sister. As I said before, my mom and I are best friends. And first we're, you know, mother and child, but we're also best friends. And I was able to help her and you know, just be there for her when she needed a support system, and vice versa. As I got older, it's the same thing. But then I faced my own circumstances because as I got older, I became a young woman. I was a mother, so on and so forth. And so due to circumstances, I had to carry that same burden, right? Mm-hmm. Working and providing. And again, like I said before, it was due to circumstances that I had to really, you know, take on this role. And so it's just, I think you get tough, you tough skin and you harden. Just through your experiences. And like you said, if there isn't anyone to balance it, then that's all you know. And you continue life as you know it because you got to get things done. And that's our story, right? We don't do it because we do it because we have to do it. Because if we don't do it, who else is going to do it, right? Who else is going to take these kids to school? Who else is going to, you know, work this job and save this money and pay all the bills and X, Y, and Z? And at the same time, I have to thrive as well. I have to thrive as a woman, as a professional. Like I have to make certain moves because I want to always be able to provide. I want to do better for myself and also for my family. I want to be a great example to my child. So it's many things to carry. And so that hardens you. And it may not harden you in a bad way. I don't think it just builds your skin to be a little tougher. And that's to handle and navigate life. And everybody's circumstances are different and it changes. As you grow, it changes. As, you know, life starts lifing and happening, things change. And so sometimes you can find ways to soften things, right? You say, oh, I don't have to carry this, right? You know what I mean? Like you can shift things as well. So as much as they get piled on, you can also overcome them. You can also shift them and realize, oh, I don't need to do that or I don't need to do this. And especially for like moms or a single moms, and I'm a single mom, I realized as my daughter grew, certain things shifted. Some things, new things got added, but other things got shifted. But then also my mindset changed, my perspective changed. And I navigated things a lot differently than, you know, in my 30s than I did in my early 20s. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So along with that question, so I actually misquoted the question. I said cause one to be hard or cause a female to be hard, and he said force a female to be hard. Mm-hmm. So like and I guess to answer that, I don't know. Like I think my answer would still be the same. Like you're forced to be hard if that counterpart is not there. But then it makes me think like, well, is your counterpart there, not there, because of some character flaw that I have, something that I'm doing or not doing appropriately. So then I'm missing out on the governor, as the sample was put in the chat last week about with the, the car as the example. Like, you know, am I missing that entity, that thing, that being that governs me because I'm no behavior? And can't be governed or won't be governed, whether it's like outright cantankerism or, you know, just in thought and how I go about things where I'm not allowing myself to be vulnerable, feminine. So then the counterpart, the man, is like, all right, see you later, sayonara, I don't want to be bothered. You know what I mean? So I guess that would be my answer to a circumstance that, so then it's my fault. A circumstance that will force a female to be hard. So that would be my, and there's another answer, but before I move forward, I don't know if you wanted to.
No, I mean, we're forced into being hard when we don't have a choice in the matter, right? When there is nothing else for us to do but to take on the role and do all the things that we have to do. Like, if there are choices, and of course you have different paths to take, you can do, if you've exhausted all of the paths or all of the choices and options that you have and you have nothing else, then you're forced to wear these hats. You're forced to carry the load. Cause, force, however you twist and turn it, whatever needs to be done is going to be done. And I think it's to the individual, like how they navigate that. Like, are you going to overstress yourself? Are you going to cause mental anguish to get all of these things done? Because sometimes we put such pressure on ourselves that we don't realize we're the ones creating the problems. We're the ones creating the issues and the burdens that we're carrying. And so I think it's to each is his own, and really how you look at life. Part of it is of your upbringing, what you were exposed to, what you weren't exposed to, you know, your trials and tribulations, regardless if you're, you know, a young person or if you're older.
Mm-hmm. So there are two questions that they're kind of related, but sort of. So then the next one is, what aspects of yourself were you lessening? And I think that was when you were describing the relationship and he said that he was intimidated. I think that's when that was put in the chat.
Okay. So the intimidation part was the way I would stand up for myself. I don't easily back down. And I think sometimes that could be intimidating because I'm boisterous and I do stand up for myself. I stand up for my beliefs as well. And I just, I'm a Taurus. So that bull can go toe for toe.
I'm not the greatest with the signs.
So, you know, so I was surprised though when that commentary came out. Like, I didn't, because I don't think I'm intimidating. I don't believe myself to be intimidating because I have a very welcoming personality. I do stand on what I stand on, but I hold space for and give grace. I hold space for people to share their opinions and perspectives, even if it's different than mine. And I'm very forthcoming with having conversations because I think, you know, it's better to hold a conversation than to hold a grudge, in my opinion. And so I want to have these dialogues and I want to talk about things if we can talk about it. But I was surprised when, you know, when he said that to me, but I worked on it. I said, okay, well, give me examples. He did. And I said, okay, well, maybe I can tone certain things down. What the lessening part of it was, I found from that conversation, I found myself then just saying, ah, I'm gonna let him have it, knowing that I didn't, you know, knowing that my belief wasn't aligned with what I'm letting him have or whatnot. Like, you know, like, all right, I'm gonna let him have that because it's not worth an argument or worth a disagreement. And I'm not gonna, you know, get into it. Because sometimes, you know, you pick and choose your battles type of thing. And mm-hmm. So for me, I started realizing I'm doing that too often. Mm-hmm. Right. So that made me feel like, no, you're making yourself small and feel uncomfortable so this person can feel more masculine and feel big. And that's not healthy because that's not being honest. Right. And you want honesty in your relationship. And so I said to myself, like, okay, we don't have to go toe for toe. Like, because I started learning too and saying to myself, like, if this is the person I love and this is who loves me back, and we're sharing our lives together, and we're building our family, and this is who I want to be with, and vice versa, then we have to speak in love and move in love. Because outside of this disagreement doesn't mean we're parting ways. It means it's a disagreement. So I started changing how, you know, I spoke, and realizing that a lot of times, and we learned this too, like, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. So I had to check myself sometimes, not to be so, you know, headstrong, or not to be, I can still get my point across without intimidating him, or without coming on too strong, which can in turn intimidate him. And he had to learn me as well. And so we learned each other together and had the, you know, uncomfortable conversations and checked ourselves in the midst of that, because sometimes ego does get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. There was a few things I was going to comment on. Like, I guess, like, for me, that's where, you know, and everybody's different. Like, the part about, well, okay, I'll start from the back, from the most recent, and go backwards. Like, the part about, like, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. Sometimes things just need to be said, regardless of how it comes out, right? But the, I think that exists, like, when there is trust, right? Or even if there isn't, like, sometimes you got to hear what it is, like, and sometimes it wasn't even said in a way. It's just because the ego is so small, I can't take it, so I'm gonna get upset because you said it like this instead of like. You know, like,
I get.
I totally understand. Like, you know, so sometimes, and that's anybody, and I had to learn that as an adult, like, because I, you know, I used to be like, well, it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And I think that works in some settings, like in the corporate setting, you know, but which I see it's not even real life at this point, but in real life, you know, when we're dealing with our family and friends, and like, you know. In those spaces, you have, like, that's the space where you're supposed to be able to be honest. And if you can't, then what's happening? And I'll even say, like, one thing that my mate share with me is like, well, what do you think the person who has to say it, you know, is going through, right? Because they have, it's got to be really uncomfortable. Like, how many times have we had to say things to someone that is, you know, some truth, and it's uncomfortable, you know? Mm-hmm. And how many times do you not say things because you don't know how they're going to take it, regardless of how you say it? So sometimes with that, it's like, eh.
It's tricky. No, you're right. It is tricky. I think every circumstance or every situation is very different. And it depends, too, who you're speaking to, right? Because some people can take it. You could just say what you got to say, and like, I get it. Like, you know, I get it, and we can talk about it. Other people might be a little bit more sensitive. So I think to each is his own. Use your discretion. And I believe just always have compassion. You never know what someone else is going through, regardless if they're your partner or not. You don't know what they're feeling all the time. You know, you don't know what they're thinking or what their day has been like. So I think approaching everything with compassion, can be a world of a difference when having like complicated conversations or uncomfortable conversations. And also timing, like timing is everything. Like know when to have them. And yes, know when to have them, know who you're speaking to. And like you said, I do agree. Sometimes you just got to say things naturally come out and then discuss. But there's so many different like aspects to consider. Like I said, each situation is different in
zone. Yeah. The other thing, there's another question about, I'll just say this real quick. So like one thing, like I had to like, so I know for me, like I went through some of that as well. Like, and I don't remember how much older than you I am, but I know I'm older.
Not by that much. Maybe a few years. That's it.
Yeah. But I remember, like, you know, that having that, like, because you're moving around. And I'm not saying you, like, I'm moving around, like, I've been moving around so long on my own. And even in a past relationship with this idea, like, I got it, I'm going to do it, you know, so that when that strong man comes along and says, no, it's going to be done like this. And he's not saying, I'm intimidated by you. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, it was the opposite. I'm not scared of you.
Right.
What it's going to be. It's like, even though I may have had like those thoughts where it's like, well, you know, well, I believe this, or I think that. I think there does come a time where you have to like let it go. Well, I had to mm-hmm. let it go. You know, I'll say it like that. I had to let it go, because if I didn't, then there, and it doesn't mean that everything is all gone, you know, like mm-hmm. there's something like, no, I didn't do that, you know, and it'll be like, everything is like, it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. And that kind of thinking and that kind of behavior is what leads to that perpetual singlehood. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's like, And I'm pulling it back to that, because it's like, we hear so many times like this, there's this growing popularity, I guess is the best word to say, in like voluntary singlehood. Like I could do it by myself. I could do battle by myself. Da, 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 da. But then a lot of times, like sometimes, and it's happened even in the celebrity world, like, you know, these perpetually single or proud and single women, they end up getting with somebody at the end, or have expressed that they don't want to be alone. You know, many of these influencers, you know, well, I don't want to be alone. Like it. So I think like there has to be at some point where we have to realize like, okay, so at what point is that just insanity? Like this, mm-hmm. well, I'm going to be by myself and I'm going to do it all by myself. Sister's doing it for themselves, you know, however that song goes. Mm-hmm. But it really not being the truth or what you want, like what does that do to the mental space? Yeah. You know? So I think those are definitely some things to think about. Chief said, that doesn't sound like we are behind now. I'm sorry. But, you know what? But I will pause, take a minute, to reset the room. Peace there, Roberson. Thank you for joining on Radio and Sovereign Eats. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And for those of you, I think it might be one person on Instagram, but welcome. Welcome to those of you on Instagram. I figured it out how to do it. That doesn't sound like one having no choice or being forced into being hard, as stated. Those sound like generational choices that lead to inevitable consequences.
I think he was talking about when I was being like from childhood and onwards. What I meant was that sometimes it is a choice. So I see that piece. But what I was saying was we mimic what we see as youngsters at times, right? In my personal situation, it wasn't a generational choice for me. It was, okay, this was the circumstance when I was little, and this is what I saw. But I always wanted, you know, a two household, you know, parent and marriage and all of those things. Like my parents' relationship did not depict itself on me. It didn't leave any negative like perspective on me. I mean, I saw my parents went through. I was able to process that and so on. But I knew what I wanted for myself. I know what the curses that I wanted to break. I knew what those were from a very young age. And that's because of the exposure that I got. And so as life progressed and I got older and I made my own choices, my circumstances just so happened to kind of be a little similar to my parents on some level. And mm-hmm. so at that point, you can't force folks to stay, you know, in relationships. You can't force people to stay in your lives. So if someone departs, then what do? You don't strap them down and say, no, you're not going anywhere. You let people do what they have to do, make choices for themselves. And so for me, it was like, okay, if this is what this person wants to do, then that's fine. I can't change their mind. I can't do anything about that. It's out of my control. So I give that to God. I did what I had to do for myself as a young woman and also for my child. And so it was like, there is no other direction to take. I have to be a single mom. So I have to take on all of these things. I have to work. I have to go to school. I have to complete my degree. I have to do X, Y, and Z. I have to raise this this baby and do all the things. And I am proud of all the decisions I've made. Could I have made better ones? But no, I'm not. I don't regret anything, because those lessons led me to be who I am and led me to become wiser and make better decisions as an adult, right? So I don't necessarily think it was generational choices that crossed over. I think that my circumstances just changed. Some of it did happen the way it happened with my parents, but not a majority didn't. Because as I said in our last show, I raised my daughter very differently than I was raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think like the generational choices. Sometimes I think, because I think about my own parents, mm-hmm. my mother, like, even though my life has turned out different, I can still see those generational choices. Like, it's just what it is for this dispensation of time. Mm-hmm. So like, she was very like, I got it, I could do it all by myself, which so, and therefore that's what I was, you know, and still am in some ways. It's like, I could do it, I'll be all right, I can do it by myself. And that those are choices, like they were made in the generation before me, they had to be yeah. her. And then I made, you know, those choices. And so I have to look back and see how that same behavior, whether learned or inherited, mm-hmm. Has affected or led to the consequences that I'm, you know, experiencing now.
No, I definitely see that. I can agree with that. I can definitely agree with that. I find myself sitting here too sometimes, and even when I was younger, just thinking back to the experiences that those before me had and how that affected me and the things that I did see. So I'm not going to be oblivious to that. And I work on that. I'm a work in progress, and I am not ever ashamed to say that, you know, I can identify where I went wrong. I can identify what behaviors I picked up that weren't mine to begin with, that I was either taught or inherited as well. And I think to myself, well, how do I change this narrative? Because I don't want it to cross over. I don't want my daughter to carry it. I don't want her children to carry it, right?
Yeah.
And so those consequences, traumas and so on and so forth, I think it takes a lot of just self-awareness and just knowing what you've been through, just being self-aware, spiritually aware as well, in order to kind of like connect the dots to move you forward. And to be honest with yourself, right? And self-reflect and say, this doesn't sit well with me. It didn't sit well with me when I saw, you know, my grandma or whoever, you know, just for example, when these women in my life went through X, Y, and Z, and I don't want that to happen here. And I don't want it to carry itself onward to the next generation either. And so I think you just dig deeper and you come to a realization, like, and really kind of self-reflect. Like I said, like look in the mirror and be honest with yourself and be truthful and say, okay, these are the things that I'm not so happy about. And this is what I want to change. And not just for me, but also for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm looking at the chat. I'm like, okay.
Keep going on the corner of my eye.
So, House of Yua asked, look, what are some ways that young women can avoid being in circumstances where they are forced to be hard? And we have an answer. I think this is an answer. Chief Yua says, I would say the distinction between force and cause are not negligible. One beckons for accountability and the other implies one is victimized. Oh, that's not the answer, but that's the response to me switching cause and force. Got it. So the cause, like, well, this caused me to do this. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, I had no fault in it, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, forced is, I don't know. I thought force would also be like, I had no fault in it as well. But part of me is like, well, if I took certain actions, then I was for, I don't know, maybe I'm not understanding this. Very different words, but I'm like,
it's like, okay, when you think of the cause, like cause and effect, this happened, which in turn made this effect happen. So, you know what I mean? Like how they teach you back in like third grade, cause and effect theory.
Yeah.
So I think about it like that. But then again, when you say force too, it's like, if someone passes away, right? If someone passes away who was the breadwinner type of thing, you are forced, and now you don't have that breadwinner anymore. You now are forced to go and make the money and maintain your family and so on and so forth.
Oh, so I think I had it reversed. I guess that's how my head would imply the victimization, where it's like you said, the cause and effect. Like, so this happened, so this caused this. So actually, the forced is what implies victimization. Caused is caused for accountability. I think I had it backwards the first time. So yeah. So then I think then the way the question was asked in the beginning was like, kind of like, well, why would you be forced? Like, why wouldn't it be like looking at what you were accountable for? Not you, I'm saying, like,
yeah, no.
General, like, why wouldn't we look at what we should be held accountable for? Like, what were those causes and effects of things? Like, what were all the actions? And not just looking at, well, the breadwinner died, mm-hmm. and now I have to do da 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 da, right? You know, but even in that, I'm like, well, did the breadwinner die because you was feeding him bad food, or he's eating bad food? Like,
right. You know, these words can get, they all coincide, right? So you can go down the rabbit hole. I think it's just holding yourself accountable. Is things are going to happen, right? People, two people, three people, whatever the case might be. There's always going to be a cause and effect. This happened, so that caused this to happen. That caused this reaction, yada, 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 which then in turn forced me to do X, Y, and Z. However you want to word it to understand it or whatnot, it's just a matter of knowing, like, okay, things need to get done, and so it's going to be done. If you can't do it, I have to do it, right? Or if I don't do it, then what happens? Is this going to be my demise if I don't do X, Y, and Z? Like, it's all these things. And again, it ties back to our mental health. So it's like, I can't let this happen, so I have to do it. I have to go out and work 3 jobs. I have to do this. I have to complete my degree. I have to work and go to, go to school at the same time. And I have to be a parent, and I have to take care of my siblings, and I have to take care of my sick parents. You don't have time to think about anything except what needs to get done, which causes the mental breakdowns and your sanity to be in question, right? And so however you, regardless if you think it's forced or if it's just like, what caused it and how do I take accountability, it's still things that need to be done. So maybe if you had a sick parent, maybe if the parent wouldn't have gotten sicker had I made the time to go with them and make sure they did their annual visits, you know, and get their day-to-day medicine. And it could be a plethora of things, right? And so we cannot beat ourselves up about things that are outside of our control, because we don't have everything in control, right? Some things are just beyond us. There's nothing we can do about it. And so for me, I've been through so much that it's like, you make the best of things. You do the best that you can. You understand and give yourself grace that you cannot accomplish everything. We only have 24 hours. We do the best with it that we can. And really, you set your sights on what you can achieve and what you want to achieve. Have your goals and aspirations, and you work through them. Everybody, you know, you may mess up today and be like, you know what? I messed up. I grandly messed up, and I know I did. And but tomorrow, I'm not doing this again. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna take a different route. And we're able to do that because we're constantly changing. We're constantly learning, and we're getting better. But it depends on you. Exactly. Are you willing to do better? Because when you know better, you do better. Isn't that the saying? And it's all about what you want. And for me, as a mom, I wanted better for myself. I wanted better for my kids. So I made better choices. Not to say I didn't have bumps in the roads. I didn't make stupid choices sometimes. Sometimes I did, you know. But we live and we learn. It's trial and life is trial and error, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't want any of the causes that were in my generation or generations before me. I don't want that to hinder me in any way in my present time. And I don't want my choices or things that I experienced to hinder my kid, and so on and so forth. And so we each one teach one type of method. I'm going to teach you from my mistakes, and I hope you can learn from them. But I also know the best teacher is experience. A lot of things, I wouldn't be who I am. I wouldn't have the knowledge that I have and the wisdom and the self-perseverance had I not experienced certain things, you know, had I not been exposed to certain things either from my family. So.
Yeah. I did put the link in the chat because I realized I forgot to do it the last time we had the live. So I did put the link in the chat for people to join, and also Chief, you guys backstage, and he's gonna join us because the chat was going off, and I don't know that I can keep up. So I'm just gonna add Chief to the stage.
Awesome.
Fix this. Peace.
Good evening. Good evening. Good evening. Hello. Good evening. Hey.
Peace. All right. There we go.
All right. So thank you for this topic. I think it's a provocative one. And I'm glad to hear these perspectives coming from you two, of course, and those in the chat. You know, but I go back to what I was saying in terms of being forced to, I'm hearing a lot of like, I just had to do this, or I was forced to do this. And it sounds like at what point do we identify that we do have our own free will, regardless of what we've seen? Because there's a lot of things that we see that are like, I know people who've grown up in church and they were teen parents. And they certainly weren't taught to do that in church, but they did it anyway, you know. And then when someone's pregnant, they say, oh, but I don't believe in abortion because I'm a Christian. Well, you also shouldn't have been having sex either, you know, without having a homestead. So I'm curious as like to where, well, I'm not curious. I actually already know. So I'm not going to be a wise behind. So, but just... Just as I don't, you know, I don't want to act like I'm setting you up for something, but I do know that understanding is the best part, mm-hmm. regardless of if I agree with what's being said or not. But at what point do you say that I did this or I came up in this sort of reality because those who came before me did this? Like, and I'll have to say, like Anushka, I'm hearing what you were saying about you were with the individual who was intimidated by you. But then I also, you know, sort of the parallel to that, I'm hearing you say, well, I grew up in a house where the women had to be strong.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm hearing is that there's a history of weak males. And then you made it yourself to a weak male, because only a weak male would be intimidated by a woman on any basis. So there's a line here that you're following. So then it turns into, but I had to do this. I had to be this way. But I don't hear, from what I'm hearing, where there wasn't a unilateral choice made to live a certain way or to be a certain thing, especially if childhood reflections were that same level of dysfunction. But maybe it wasn't identified as dysfunction. Maybe like, oh, the women just ruled everything. Maybe that was just, it was normalized.
Are you done with the commentary?
Yep.
Okay.
But so, I have more.
Yeah.
So I'm going to respond to what you say.
Yeah. No, no. I appreciate what you said. And you know what's so amazing about this? Because it's so aligned, because most recently, I had a conversation with my daughter, and the very thing that you just said, I said to her. And I was like, I'm taking accountability for the partners that I have chosen, right? Because I was like, I always, like you said, it sounded like, it took me 30 something years to see this myself.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't strong men around. So yes, what I saw coming up, right? It was never a dysfunction. I had to realize, yes, that's dysfunction, because a lot of things were, you know, shifted under the rug and so on and so forth. But sure. I had to hold myself accountable as an adult now and have these real conversations also with my kid, because I didn't want her to see my mistakes and continue the pattern, right? And I had to say, like, you know, I'm seeing the pattern here, and I need to break this. I need to stop it, because this is not what I want for myself, right? Mm-hmm. And in order for me to grow, in order for me to really have someone who is complementary of who I am, who is not going to feel intimidated, then that person has to be stronger. And then I realized, well, I'm picking what I saw and I said I didn't want, because that's all I know. And I have that, you know, how you always want to give people a chance and
sure,
you know, like that, like you, and I don't judge a book by its cover type of thing, but I think that sometimes does an injustice for me. So I can truly appreciate your feedback on that, because it's something I recognize myself, and I had to be honest with myself and say, you know what, you have to take accountability for that too. Cause you know, you're the person making those choices for the person you you decide to share your life with, right? So right. I appreciate that, and I truly, I'm glad you came on, because I definitely understand your commentary better than reading it through the chat.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. My curiosity also is in like how your childhood experience is transcribed to your choice. And what I mean is, like, you know, we may have fathers who are weak, mothers who are domineering, or it could be vice versa. You know, your father may be a domineering jerk, and, you know, your mother may be someone who doesn't advocate for herself. So it can go on either side. But I'm curious, like, from a woman's perspective, what, like, now that you're saying that you've taken accountability, you seem like, okay, well, maybe that wasn't the formula to yield the best results. What was acceptable that you saw before that you look at now and say, like, no way, that's unacceptable in a partner? You know, like, how did it transcribe? Because I'm sure, like, you saw certain things growing up, but I'm sure these men loved you, you know, gave you hugs and ice cream. So it's not like, you know, like, there wasn't a relationship there. But how did that lack transcribe? And now that your eyes have been open to it, you know, what are the things, what are the standards that you say, no, this is unacceptable?
One thing that sticks out is the mental and emotional abuse that mm-hmm. was always accepted. And it was like, in the culture, it's, no, you stick by your husband, you have children, so what are you going to do? You can't leave your home because you have two young girls, or, you know what I mean? And so that dysfunction and that type of abuse, and even to, like, physical abuse, I've saw. Mm-hmm. I never agreed with it since I was young. And even as I grew now, I became more so strong-minded about that. Like, that's just not acceptable. You don't do things like that. You don't treat your loved ones in that way. And so for me, some of the men in my family really kind of set a low standard mm-hmm. when it came to men, because it's just like, this is not what I want. So I looked at Indo-Guyanese men with disgust mm-hmm. due to the sure. fact that this is all I saw. And I said, no, I don't want that for myself. And so now that I'm older, I definitely know the difference, and I see things, and I see certain red flags, and I'm like, no, I don't want that, regardless of, you know, the kind of person that it is, regardless of race and, you know, nationality and so on and so forth. There's certain things that I want for myself. So if I see, like, certain traits that I saw when I was younger, I know it's time for, you know, I don't entertain it.
So are you aligning the idea of, and I know I use the term weak male, so that might not even be your term. So, but mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, but are you aligning the idea of a weak man or male? Because I wouldn't really call a man is not weak. Mm-hmm. So a weak male, are you aligning that with the idea of also an abusive one?
Not necessarily. I think those can be two different, you know, like two different aspects of a male. Just because you're weak doesn't mean you're going to be abusive. And if you're abusive, I think that is on some level weakness. That shows weakness, because if you have to abuse to feel powerful or to be empowered, then that's conflicting.
Well, abuse can also be negligence. So mm-hmm. a male who's weak is, in effect, abusive mm-hmm. because he's standing in the place. He's posturing himself as one thing. Of course, garnering your trust based on what he's impersonating, and abusing your trust. He's really, he's robbing you. It's theft by deception. You know, so essentially, mm-hmm. it's still an abuse, mm-hmm. you know. Abusive positioning. I mean, even if a weak male enters into your yoni, it's abusive, because mm-hmm. depositing weakness within you, you know. Mm-hmm. But so now, as you spoke about, like, you know, some of the challenges you saw with Guyanese males, what was it in the women or the females that complemented that sort of mentality or that sort of character? Because obviously they were just as wicked and dysfunctional as evil as you're describing the males. So what was it about them that was also evil that made those relationships come together?
I wouldn't use the word evil, because I definitely don't think of my mom as evil or wicked, or my grandmother. But I think it was more of a cultural thing. And I think from generations prior, that was learned and inherited. It's like, this is what you do. This is what you accept. And so it was just like, from generation to generation is what was taught, what was displayed and demonstrated. Sure. And so everyone just gravitated to what the elders said and kept it moving. And no one questioned it, because we're taught, don't question your elders, right? That is a form of disrespect. And because no one questioned it and people were afraid to question it, because you'll get in trouble, especially the young women. Sure. Don't be a female and ask, you know, a question, because like, you're disrespectful, you know, you're out of pocket, so on and so forth. So it was just like everything was all hush hush. And so you just follow suit, and it kept happening and happening. My mom didn't find her courage until I was a teenager to break away, you know, and that was a very hard thing, because my sister and I had to encourage her and empower her and keep, you know, keep helping her. And so I think for me, the women entertained it, I would say, not because they wanted to be abused in any fashion, not because they liked the dysfunction, but because that's all they were know. That's all they know. That's all they've seen. That's all they were taught. And they didn't feel that they had any other choice. And they were led to believe that without this husband, you cannot survive. You cannot thrive, because he is the one to take care of the household. That was the perspective.
And so, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
That's from back in the days, and that's from, you know, people staying back home and not knowing any better. And then they come to the States and it's very different. Women are more empowered. There's more opportunities. You can go and work now. You can make as much as your husband does, or your partner, if not more. And so I think my mom found her independence and started thriving and like really standing up for herself and finding the courage to say enough is enough. I don't want this for myself, and I don't want this for my kids.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to ask. So when you said, like, when you came into your teen years, like, she started advocating, that's what I was going to ask. Like, were you in Guyana or were you in America?
We were in America. We came up here back in 89.
Okay. All right. So you came into your teenage years in America, and you started to see that there were different options other than the route. But it still essentially sounds like, I mean, yeah, there's this saying in the Caribbean, I'm like, everyone knows that Guyanese men are crazy. Like, you know, it's just what everybody says, right? You know, but okay. Hey, just like Haitian men, y'all face it. I don't know.
I mean,
everybody says it.
Haitian men. I have Haitian family. So like, it's the Caribbean, like, you know, it's just this culture of, and I always felt that I felt like, and I guess this was due to what I was exposed to. I felt like Caribbean men were they felt that they were superior to women. I used to be like, no. And I don't want that, because I don't want that for myself. But I think as we evolve, as we become more educated and realize, and not all, and I realized too, as I got older, that was my mentality when I was younger, because that's all I saw. That's all I knew. But you can't judge one person, like an entire body of people for one person, right? Sure. So a man is his own man before he's anybody's man. He's going to do what he wants to do, think how he wants to think, so on and so forth. And so what I had to realize was, just because this one person behaved in this manner doesn't mean the rest of the people are going to behave in that same way. The rest of mankind, or the men, species of men, are not going to behave in the same way. So you have to evolve mentally and emotionally. You have to, like, you have to understand that, you know, sometimes that person, that man who was abusive to, that's all he saw. Because it's just such a layered conversation, because I think back to, well, what did my grandfather show? What did he do? You know, sure. What did his parents do, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, my belief is, I can't go back but so far in history for my people, because my grandparents didn't keep great records. Like, our people didn't keep great records of anything. Mm-hmm. And so I only know up to my grandparents on both sides. I don't know my great, great, you know, my greats. I don't know. But the assumption that I come to is this is what has been taught. This is what they have seen. And so this is how they behave. And even when they came to America, because I came when I was small, when I was very young, I was five. So I grew up differently than my parents did. And so it was kind of hard. And even though they were young, too, when they came here, it was still hard because that was still their surrounding. You know, the family's all together. Everybody's in one house and it's the same thing over and over on a repetition. It takes just that one person to call somebody out or you say enough is enough. And then you become the black sheep. Yeah. I was the black sheep in my family. Well, I would say black sheep. I used to always say, well, I look good in black, so I'm fine. You know? But I always went against the grain because my belief system was very different. I wanted more. I wanted different outcomes. I didn't want the same things. And so I moved differently. Some things, I will be honest, some things did repeat itself, but I learned and I broke away from that. And I held myself accountable. And even to this day, it's still a healing journey, right? Because it was years of things happening, but it's still a healing journey. But I hold myself accountable and I know how to have these unhealthy conversations. Well, healthy conversations that are uncomfortable. That's what it is. And I also make sure that I have the conversations with my daughter as well, because she asks tons of questions. You know, they're inquiring minds Gen Z. So yeah, she wants to know about the past and, you know, what led us here. What was that? Why did this happen? Why did that happen? I have the conversations. If I'm at fault, I'm at fault. And I'm not ashamed to say that because it helps her understand and it also teaches her in the process and it helps me heal.
Yeah.
I honor my experiences. I honor my grandparents' experiences, my parents' experiences, because it is what it is. I don't just throw it away. It's like I see it. I know it. I'm going to honor it because this is your experiences. I'm not going to take it away from y'all, but I'm going to heal from it because I do not want to pass it along. And I want my daughter to heal from whatever she has seen thus far and have her heal so she doesn't pass it along. Because to me, it's like these traumas end here, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, I can.
That is the goal, right? We want better for our children. So whatever the work we need to do, I feel like we do it now and we leave that footprint so the next generation can learn and then they can do better and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I still say maybe because sometimes it's like we're, you know, it takes us a long time to rebalance. And sometimes through that process, like our children, they're no longer adolescents and they're looking at you. They're 30 years old. And you're like, wait, Eureka, I got it. Like, you know, it's like, you know how much I've been through so far already?
All over the process.
So you get a little inch forward. You know, I consider like the scripture, a wicked woman is given as a portion to a wicked man. Mm-hmm. But a godly woman is given to him that feareth the Most High. So like when we speak about certain cultures where it's like the men are wicked and the women aren't, I think that's a part of that same slave narrative where the man is demonized. And the woman is angelicalized, you know? So I think until we come to an honest conversation, even about that, we'll continue to be imbalanced, you know, because then there's this thing that happens perpetually. You know, you have a lot of women who come from the Caribbean and they come to the States and the last thing they want is a Caribbean man. You know, they run in high speed away. I don't want to deal with no Jamaican man. I don't want no Bahamian man. Because all they do is cheat and have families across the other, you know. But it's this sort of concept as if, you know, you and I are part of the same whole. But somehow I'm the evil part. You know, that's white colonialistic insanity that's been implanted in us. So that's why I asked that question about, like, what do you feel the compliment was? But, yeah. So, yeah, I thank you. I'm not going to say too much more because, like I said, understanding is the best part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if I don't agree with what's saying, but I'm so very happy to be able to hear someone who can articulate their perspective and their experience. And like you said, speak about something that is perhaps uncomfortable, you know, without at the same time dishonoring where they came from. But we always have to see those who came before us are not above our scrutiny, you know, because we all came up on plantations, no matter how we want to look at it. So we have to look at plantation culture and what that produced, you know, and it's continued to produce. Because like you said, it's back in the days, but, you know, it's still kind of like that.
It's still, yeah, you know? No. And I can appreciate that. And I think like, I love this conversation because there is a lot more to it than just, you know, my
experience
and the parent. It goes way, way back. And I think the more we have these kind of conversations and we dig deeper, the more we'll get to a really honest place with ourselves and with each other, and then can work from a healthy perspective. Like, well, how do we change this narrative and how do we really heal? And we can't just do it one person in one generation. And it's a work in progress, because like my daughter may not get all the gist of it, and I might have like an epiphany at her age, and then she's gonna be like, "Wait, what?" Huh? But you know, but progress, right?
Yeah, you just got a target. Sometimes our targeting is very unfocused, and we're looking at people who are victims of the same system that we are currently actively engaged in, and we're not targeting the source of the actual issue. You know, who sat us down and told us how to have divine unions with each other? You know, who sat us down and even explained to us the mysteries and the sacred sciences of sex?
Yeah.
You know, let alone our roles. And of course, there's no roles when, like you said, you come to America, I can make as much as you can. But does your financial or rather your potential of consumption, does that dictate what your value is? But if we don't have our own cultural values, we'll take these values and say, well, I make this much money, so therefore I get as much say as you do, and you don't have anything to say, and you can't do this, and so forth and so on, because we haven't really sat down and looked at what are our original reference points and compendiums for value. Yeah. And it has nothing to do with fiat currency or how much we earn or our ability to consume within a beast system, you know. But I'm not gonna, you know, put too much testosterone in the room.
They like testosterone.
Lovely waterfall of estrogen.
Come back as a guest.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let the waterfall keep flowing. All right. Peace.
Thank you.
Please give thanks, Chief. You know what? He brought up a really good point, and there are questions in the chat. It was a really good point. That kind of, I wanted to segue into that, like where he quoted the scripture about the wicked woman being, you know, paired with the wicked man, but the godly woman will be paired with the godly man. And I know those were not the words, but I'm leading to my point about, you know, one, and this goes to one of the other pins that we had from the last show about the, I guess it would be like cognitive dissonance, like of being in church. Like, okay, a better example was when Chief talked about the example of the teenage pregnancy, like you're a teenage mom in church, but you know, you're not supposed to be doing that. So there's this movement like, well, I'm a Christian, I do this, I do that, but you don't necessarily want to accept all pieces that are there. And so I think some of what we talked about today, I see the clock. I want to be respectful of time. But some of the things we talked about today or this evening being related to that, like, you know, how we choose mates. Did anybody sit us down? You know, even if they did, like, you know, are we understanding them the way that we're supposed to? This one, understanding is the best part. Mm-hmm. And then, like, are we even accepting when, you know, when that truth is given or when something is given? Or do we sit and like, well, I don't believe in that, or that's not how I move. But at the same time, I'm saying I go to church and I'm a Christian and I do this and I do that, you know. So it makes me think of like, so the comment that I made two strongs ago on the live about like the idea of like partnership. And I think there are some times where it probably is a partnership or like equal, but for the most part, we're not equal to them. Like, we bring different things, and things that are inherently different can never be equal, you know? And we've been given our title, like, you know, I'm going to, you know, bring out Eve, and she's going to be a helpmeet, because you need help. You need to be paired up. Everything else on this planet is paired up that you have dominion over. So this is what's like you as well. And it comes from you. And that idea of, and that reality that we don't, and I say, and I'm saying we, as in like the collective females, right? And again, we know that it's not everyone. But like collectively, it's like, well, I don't want to obey, or I don't want to do this. I don't want to be lesser than, you know? But at the end of the day, this is what it says right here. At least that's what, you know, for those of us who follow scripture, like that's what it is. And that's how we move. And for some people who aren't, I would, or like, say if you're not, you know, you don't follow scripture, or you say like, well, that's not how I move. That's not what I believe. Okay, that's fine. I would also say then how do we explain, like, there's studies the world over that show that married people have better mental health outcomes than people who are single. And again, it goes against like this whole movement of like picking, you know, being single voluntarily, like just things that just don't make sense, people doing things that don't make sense. And then that takes us back to like, you know, what's happening, like what is that doing to our psyche? What is that doing to our mental health, where we're constantly engaged? And at this point, when I say we, I'm just saying collectively, like people moving around, mm-hmm. constantly doing things that don't make sense, or going against what the universe is, just because, like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
I think, especially in this public health, I think all this is valid, and in this public health space, like a lot of things are so made up. Like everybody's getting information from every single place. You don't know what's real, what's not.
Say that again.
A lot of things. And you know, and I have a girlfriend that is super smart, and like she said, like she researches everything. Like she'll have an answer for everything, and she'll have the facts to back it up. And I learned so much from her just by having just regular girlfriend talk. And she always says it, like everything is made up. Like you have to know yourself, right? Be self-aware and have your belief system and have your community and always be grounded and centered, because if you follow all these things and follow the noise, you're going to be all messed up, right? So for the people who choose to be single, I see it as, if you know that you have work, self-work, inner work to do, and you choose to be single, I look at it as, okay, well, then you're choosing yourself in this moment. Doesn't mean you're choosing to be single for the rest of your life, but in this moment, you're focused on self so you can be better for you. And in turn, when the time is right, you can be the best partner you can be for who you're meant to be with. Mm-hmm. And other people are so quick, like, I don't want to be alone. I got to get with somebody. I got to get married. And it's sometimes they miss the point of what marriage entails, what it is. You got to go back to the foundation. Like, well, what is it that you want? And are you ready for this type of commitment? Because this is a life commitment. And a lot of people I find this day and age don't have that. They don't have that level of understanding of what marriage should be and the kind of commitment it is. And it's not. And you always hear people, oh, well, throwing the keys, you're going to jail, when they think about marriage. But why do you compare jail and marriage? Like, this is not a hellhole. Like, this is a beautiful thing. It's supposed to be a union of two people choosing to be together and share their lives together, right? And to build a life. And so I think society has like thrown all of their opinions, and people are like grasping for this, that, and the third. And some people romanticize all the wrong things, that there's so much confusion. So that's why, like, nothing is real. Like it's all bogus. So,
yeah. I would also throw in though that we're working with different timelines, right? Mm-hmm. So like in that, you know, singlehood, according to the census, almost 50% of adults are single. That's not a good stat. And then when you break it down by race, Black people are at the top of that. So then it makes, what?
But why? Why?
Well, that's the question. Like that's what we need to find out. Like why? And then I think if I remember the stats correctly, so like for Black Americans, around 30% are married compared to 53% of white Americans. So like we marry at, or melanin dominant individuals marry at lesser rates. Why? I would think that part of it is some of what we're discussing here, like how we're not moving toward one another. It could be that, well, I'm going to be single and I'm happy being single. And the truth, but that's not necessarily the truth, you know? And even in the chat, it says like honest assessment is vital. Like we're not being honest. We're not being honest with ourselves. And then I would even go back and say like some of that, you know, well, I want to work on myself. We have to be honest. If we're 40 plus working on self, you probably don't have enough. You don't have the same time as a 20-year-old working on self to get with somebody or find that one or find your counterpart. You don't have the same amount of time. So then what? Then you're alone, and then you're racking your brain because your, you know, anxiety sets in, depression sets in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to beg to differ because I'm going to be 40 next month and I'm currently single and I don't have a problem with being single. Cause I know what I want, but I also know how much God loves me. And I know this is public health and we're not in church or anything like that, but I've said it plenty of times, very spiritual. And I have a very big belief, and you know, with God. And so I believe that who he has created for me and who he has me aligned with, that'll happen in his timing, not my timing. And so whatever the self-work that I have to do for me, I'm going to do, and I'm going to do with grace, and I'm going to be obedient, and I'm going to be patient, and I'm going to still live my life. And I think the pressures of, oh my God, you're going to be 40, you're not married. I always had that pressure. I'm one of the eldest out of all my cousins, the eldest of my siblings. Mm-hmm. And those who have gotten married at younger ages than I are now divorced. Aunts and uncles, parents, I've seen it. So that's why I say to me, is for myself and my own self, I'm not going to rush into something just because everybody thinks I should. I'm not going to do it for society. I'm not going to do it for anyone but me. And I believe that marriage is forever. I don't want to get married 10,000 times. I want to get married once, and that be that. And so I'm fine with waiting until it's my time. I'm going to do my due diligence to preserve myself and to live a happy, wholesome, healthy life and do what I have to do. And what is not in my control is being given to God. And that's all. And I'm content with that. Right. So I think that to each is his own. And it's so much noise outside of us and everyone's perspective and everyone's opinion. Sometimes you have to block things out and do what's best for you. And your belief is your belief. And you and I can agree to disagree. Your perspective is yours, mine's is mine. And we have different experiences. So our point of views are definitely going to be different. And where we're at in life is going to also, you know, impact our decisions and how we live. I just think, you know, I give people grace to make their own decisions and live how they see best. Without judgment, because I don't want anyone to judge me, and I certainly don't judge others, because I've been the person that has been judged. Remember when I've been the black sheep. And so I'm just like, I know what I've been through. I know my experiences, and the same people that doubted me are checking on me and checking for me now. Oh, what's she up to? How is she doing? I see her at NASDAQ in Times Square. I see her doing yes. Because I'm blessed and I stay true to me and I stay true to who I believe in. And so my faith has carried me long and far. And I never allow my experiences to project anything onto anyone else. Mm-hmm. So good, bad, indifferent, that's fine. I'm going to go through what I got to go through, and I'm going to handle it, and I'm going to do it with grace. And I'm going to allow people to do the same, you know, and figure things out. And because of that mentality, and because I've been having this girlfriend and saying, you know, sometimes you got to meet people where they're at. Once I implemented that part in my head, I had so much of a better relationship with my daughter's dad, because I had to meet him where he's at. I couldn't have expectations of him. And that's just one example. And I share that with you guys because you have to meet people where they're at sometimes. And sometimes you just got to give them grace to do what they got to do. And you can be on the sidelines. If you don't have to entertain, you don't have to engage if it's not aligned, right? But you could just be on the sidelines like, do you, I'm going to do me, you know, and that's just that.
Yeah. I do want to say, well, this is where we're going to agree to disagree. We judge, everybody judges.
But not to belittle. I wouldn't, like you, we all do, right? Not, we're humans. But don't judge to belittle or diminish anybody.
No, right? I think that's where the compassion that mm-hmm. we spoke about earlier has to come in. But like, there's always like a, even if it's a split second, like just walking down, sitting in the subway, I judge about 50 people. Like, you know, just sitting on the train.
I understand. But and it goes back. It goes back to like, you know how the saying when a pregnant woman judges someone else's kid and like, why are you talking about somebody's kid? You don't want your baby. If that's in your heart,
yeah,
you gonna get whatever you get regardless, right? But at the end of the day, I feel like even if folks have some judgment in them, and we all are guilty of that, I've been a little judgmental sometimes, but not to a point where it's like I think I'm better than anybody because I know mm-hmm. I'm not.
Yeah.
But I don't judge people to put them down. I don't judge people in that sense where it's like tearing somebody apart. Like, mm-hmm. that's not me at all. I let folks do what they got to do because I know how much I appreciate people letting me do what I got to do. Because regardless if you, whatever you say, I'm going to do what I want to do regardless. And I'm going to do it in my way and move in my pace and, you know, and protect my peace, protect my mental health, protect my emotional health, because there's just so many things going on in this world that I can't afford the little things or irrelevant people to sit here and disrupt me or interrupt me or shake my world in any way. Like, I love my life. I like having feng shui. I like having, you know, things be a particular type of aura around me. I like bringing a particular aura. And if I'm happy inside, I'm happy outside, and that exudes, right? And people tell me that, and I don't realize like it's exuding the way it is. But when you just randomly come to me, I'm like, you know what? I can't thank anybody but God for that, because I don't look like what I've been through. And when I'm going through something, you still wouldn't know, because I don't let it get to my mental where I'm just like, I feel defeated. And I've recently, and I always said, like, there's such a big difference between struggle and suffering. And mm-hmm. I'm not suffering. Like, we go through struggles and people are like, oh my God, they think it's the end of the world. But there's other people who are dealing with so much more, right? And I have it so much worse. So with this whole pressure of marriage and the singlehood talk and all that stuff, I'm like, I don't want to be in certain parts of those conversations. It has nothing to do with me, because that's your opinion and I respect your opinion and it is yours to have, but I also have mine. And so I don't want you thinking you can shake this up, because you can't. I'll listen, you know, I'll listen. But like, you know, how we have healthy conversations, you understand me, I understand you. Sometimes we agree to disagree, and that's cool. Again, we're two different people at two different spaces in our lives. And mm-hmm. so it's just a common thing to have respect, right? Yeah. You know, respect everybody where they're at.
Yeah. Well, I'm in that 40 group, and I'm like, I'm not trying to be alone. Listen,
I want companionship. I welcome it, but not just any companionship. Like, I know, again, we know what we've been through, right? We know we're 40. Well, I'm about to be 40. You're already 40. So you have some experiences, right? And you're also growing mentally, spiritually, emotionally. We're always learning on a day-to-day basis and growing as people. And so you get to know what you like, what you don't like. You get to see certain things. You look at things from a different perspective, a different lens. And so for me, it's just, I'm cool. I'm happy. You know, I'm healthy. And by the grace of God, every day I get another chance to make life what I want it to be and to chase my dreams and to be the best mother I can be and be the best woman I can be for me. And when God sees fit to send my companion and the person he wants me to union with, he'll do just that. Right. And I'm confident in that. And that's the most important thing. I'm confident in that. And I believe that. And there's nobody that's going to change my mind about it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think there's still a lot more to this mm-hmm. chat, and we'll get into. I think it's going to come up throughout, because we have a whole lot of different topics to talk about when we come back. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for coming. Thank you for being in the chat. You know what? Let me see if I can address some of these questions really quickly. Mm-hmm. If you are watching us on Instagram, we might shut off because, you know, Instagram. They only give you an hour, so if you click off, just come on over to YouTube. But I do want to acknowledge like some of the things in the chat just very quickly. There was a question, so like before you came on TV, I asked a question in the chat to the women about whether they would, you know, find themselves attracted to a man who was intimidated, and it was overwhelmingly no. And I guess that would be a no for you too. This is why it's, you know, no longer, you're no longer an item. Like, I don't know that anybody would. And then even after he got on, like, there was a distinction between like a man and a male. And I think overwhelmingly we want men.
I want a man with a good heart that got heart.
Man and not just a male.
Yes.
And then, Massimilian, like he talked about the, and I'm skipping around, so if I don't get the comment, I apologize.
I'm trying to read them too.
Keep it in the comments. Is the breaking of these generational curses something that one can do alone without people? That's a good question, because as Chief of Staff, you mentioned something. I was thinking, like, well, we can work on ourselves, but we can't see our own backs. And Chief has said that many times. We can't see our own backs. So, like, I think you do. You do need a community to, like, hold you accountable. You do need a mate to hold you accountable, like, whatever that relationship is. Because if not, then how do we know that we're really addressing or fixing a thing that we're saying we're working on? You know what I mean?
No, that's absolutely true. I think for me, it's hard for me to have that accountability partner, because I'm the only one, I believe, in my family that's doing this. So what I do is I look inward a lot, and there have been many times that I had to face, you know, the things that the choices I've made and the things that I could have changed. Like, it's like holding the mirror and you're like talking to yourself and you're like, all right, it's time to be honest, because you can't lie to you. Right. And I do a check, because I start having certain conversations, I'm asking questions to my daughter to see what her response is. And I asked her so she can reflect on me and see if my behaviors have changed. Because I know if my behaviors have changed, they have impacted her. And therefore, she moves a particular way and her behavior changes, right? If I'm going to be, like, for instance, if you have a parent or you have a family member always barking at you, yelling, da da da, you're going to be more aggressive in your response, or you're going to zone them out. Like, these, like, her generation, they're going to whatever and not listen and whatnot. And you're not going to be able to be impactful whatsoever. But if you come to them in a way where they understand and where you can have open conversations, where you're having honest conversations and your tone is different, your compassion level is very different, then they're going to respond to you very differently as well. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to take that with them. Right. And that's going to help them change their behavior. And you have to practice it and you have to implement that. It has to be consistent. But I try to, like, I'll have conversations with my mom too. But my mom is also going through her own, like, health issues. So it's hard to have certain conversations with her. But I try my best, you know, and I try to get as many relatives as I can to have these conversations. But I also know my people, like, you know, I know how they are. And I know who I can have.
About take care of yourself and
Yeah, but it can be done. I do agree, though, you do need a community. You definitely do. And sometimes community doesn't have to always be family. Community are the people who understand this journey that you're going on. And I have girlfriends who are my community, and I have, you know, friends, male friends as well.
I think your community can be your family.
No, it can be. It's not always your family, but I'm saying if you don't have your family.
No, what I mean is your family does not always have to be blood relatives.
Yes. Yes, agreed.
Mm-hmm. All right, and we're going to wind it down. So, Chief, you got put in the chat. The woman was created. I think this is when I was talking about the help me. The woman is created for the man. 1 Corinthians 11:9. Neither was the man created for the woman, but the woman for the man. So that, I think it goes into a lot of what we were talking about. Again, this is going to come up, I think, all throughout. That goes back to that cognitive dissonance. And I'm speaking specifically to that group of people. Cause again, if you're not that person, well, I don't go by scripture. I don't go by, then it wouldn't apply to you. But if you are in that group where it's like you in church every Sunday, and then yeah, this applies to you. Like, that's that cognitive dissonance, how you can, you know, you're having these two opposing thoughts. If you're not following what you say you follow, then there's something wrong there. Mm-hmm. that has to be rectified. So I would just put that out there for all of you listening. Sovereignty says, even if we could see our own backs, our emotional, I think you might have pressed enter before you finished, or maybe saying, I'll just let you finish. I'll come back to it. Arnie Radio says, thank you for sharing. Thank you for coming, listening. The beauty of free will is not having to convince anyone of a mindset. There's also beauty in receiving understanding, which honest discourse helps with. Yeah. And that's what we're going to be doing all this season. Because I think, like, we had, like, really good conversations and talked about, like, a lot of different things in public health. But I think this season, it's really about getting, like, to those raw conversations. Because we always said, like, we're going to touch the topic that nobody wants to. Okay, well, season 4, it's on.
Touching them.
Ready to be uncomfortable. Get comfortable with being uncomfortable. It's okay. We all, it's okay. All right. So give thanks, everyone. I don't know if you were finished, Sovereignty, but if you weren't, please put it in the comments and we can start a dialogue in the comments. And for those of you, any comments that I missed, please put them in the comments, or I could also, you know, well, put them in the comments. I'm not going to commit to something. So thank you, everyone. So we'll be back on the 23rd, where we'll have a guest, Dr. Iruku. She is a professor at UNC, and we're going to be talking about how racism affects children. So she's also another speaker that I met at a conference, and I thought that her talk, her keynote, was really really good, and really there was a lot of good information about racism and how it affects children, and talking about how it induces trauma and stress, and you know what that does to especially brown children. So she's going to join us on the 23rd. So be there or be square, but don't be square. Don't be L7. Come here and listen to what we got to say. So we'll be back same time, 8 p.m. April 23rd on your favorite channels. And for those of you who catch the podcast will be available on the Wednesday following the live air. Thanks, everybody. Have a
good night.
And peace and happy Ramadan, everyone.
Yes. Happy Ramadan.
Thank you for joining us here at True Health Live. Remember to like, save, share, and subscribe. Leave a comment and send an email if there's a topic if you want to discuss. You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at True Health Live. You can also listen on DeidreSully.com. If there's a topic you'd like to discuss or hear, you can send an email to TrueHealthLive@gmail.com. See you next time.